Hey everybody, welcome back. Why Bitcoin podcast. Joined today with Andrew Begin of Blink. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
This is going to be a fun one. For those of you that know who I am on Twitter, I've been a bit of a Lightning hater, and I put it out to the universe to say, who can talk to me about Lightning and its actual use cases and see if this thing's actually going to do something? So, Andrew, you reached out, or I think a few people requested that I reach out to you. So this will be fun. We'll try and get to the bottom of what Lightning is and what it's going to do. Sound good?
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Okay, right on. I guess we should, since this is a Bitcoin podcast, how about a quick little intro of who you are and what your role is? I like to ask a question like this. What do you think your role is in the Bitcoin world? How would you label yourself?
Oh, that's a good way to put it. The short answer, I guess I would say I'm a community builder, or a sort of a community member. The longer version is I work at a company called Galloy, makers of Blink, which is formerly known as Bitcoin Beach Wallet. So Galloy builds open source Bitcoin banking infrastructure, and we're a remote company, about say 20 of us around the world. The very beginning of Galloy in 2020 involved founder Nicolas Berthe and a couple other guys building the Bitcoin Beach wallet in El Zante, known as Bitcoin Beach. Subsequently, I joined the team 2.5 years ago or so. So I've been along for a lot of the ride. And last year we rebranded Bitcoin Beach Wallet to Blink. And alongside that came many improvements to the wallet, which we could get into. We can kind of maybe go into, the wallet's features and the why. It is a custodial Lightning wallet. There's that angle. But the other side of it, and back to my sort of short answer, the community builder side of it is, we saw that in the footsteps of Bitcoin Beach, there are 20, 30, 40, 50, depending on how you slice it, many different communities around the world that are replicating the Bitcoin Beach experiment. And basically what that means is they're asking the question, like, can we build a circular economy where people spend Bitcoin, earn Bitcoin, save Bitcoin? And that's, I think, where Lightning is really doing a great job today. And like you said, you've got some gripes with it, so we can dig into that. And then to round out the intro, I'm the founder of Rhode Island Bitcoin Meetup. So I'm in the Northeast in the States. We have a small meetup. We're going to have our 19th, I think, coming up. We do the first Wednesday of the month. And if there's anybody in the Northeast, holler at me. I'm excited for digging into the conversation. One other thing I must say, because I listened to your episode with HODL, you guys were talking about, I think, like furniture and building houses. And you said something like you built furniture or cabinets or something. So as an aside, part of the sort of when I'm not or alongside my rabbit hole diving, I also am a sort of a amateur woodworker and wannabe regenerative farmer. So I have a lot of sort of things going on at home that involve some of that stuff that's sort of my outside of my Bitcoin world.
Hell yeah, man. That's awesome. It's a fun hobby to have. I try my best to do that. It's few and far between lately, but yeah, man, like real life work gets in the way of projects. It's nice to just build some cool projects that are fun. It's an awesome hobby. You said you were, and hopefully Bitcoin brings that back, because man, some of the furniture that we buy today is just IKEA. I've had so much. I'm so sick of like looking at IKEA shit, man. hopefully Bitcoin fixes this.
Even lumber. I was thinking this the other day, because we got these old boards, these chestnut boards from a 1800s house, and somebody was selling them Facebook Marketplace or something for like $60. And it's like these big and wide boards. And I was thinking, like, how much would you have to pay to get the same amount of like shitty pine at Home Depot or Lowe's? And it would be like, it would be more expensive to get this like crap versus the old stuff. So I do think that people are getting, or Bitcoin is part of the equation, moving away from the fiat, you know, consumerism and moving back towards quality goods. So hopefully by that time I'll be skilled enough to be building furniture for people.
Hell yeah, man. That's a good goal to have. We'll check in a year or so and see where you're at. That's awesome. I did want to just ask, you said you've been working for the Blink team, Galloway. So you said you've been working for them for 2 years. How long have you been researching or looking at Bitcoin before you got a job there? Like, how long have you been a Bitcoiner for, interested in it?
Yeah, actually, not super long. I fell fast and hard into the rabbit hole. I mean, like everybody, Bitcoin kind of came on my radar early days, and I didn't even think twice and let it just sail by. And now I, you know, kick myself for that. But it was around like 2019, 2020, when a friend of mine was like, hey, you really need to start, like, watch this video, read this book. And it was kind of in a friend's chat that we had going. And you know, I just, you know, there was, you know, Saifedean stuff in there. And there was, you know, eventually it was Saylor and Breedlove series. And, you know, when the Price of Tomorrow came out from Jeff Booth, like, oh, there was a lot of these, like, you know, things that I just was binging. I had a baby daughter at the time, and I just remember having an ear pod, you know, in my ear, you know, kind of rocking her at night or whatever, just listening to hours of podcasts and books. And so yeah, it was about probably a year or a year and a half until actually I had this like vivid moment where I was listening to something and I was having that kind of crisis moment where you're like, wow, this is bigger than I thought. And I thought it was big, and I have to zoom out, you know, not like my own lived experience, but like everybody alive only knows like the central banking experiment. And I have to zoom out centuries to like understand Bitcoin. And I look over at the computer and there's a tweet in it from Dennis Parker that says, when you finally understand Bitcoin, you're going to have a panic attack. And I practically like burst out laughing, because I was kind of in this moment where I was like, am I crazy, or is the rest of the world crazy? Just around that time was Bitcoin 2021, and Jack Dorsey was interviewed by Alex Gladstein, and he said something to the effect of, Bitcoin is the most important thing in my life to work on, and I'm going to spend my time, you know, working on it as much as I can. And that was, alongside that, he also shared a tweet thread that day where he said, we're going to build a hardware wallet, and if you're interested, like, you know, reach out to this guy. And so that was the moment where I went from like, oh, this is something that's just so amazing, and like not knowing what to do, to being like, I just need to just work in this. Like, I come from the advertising and like strategy consulting industry, and there's a lot of great people and a lot of smart people in that industry, but I always had this internal conflict, which was, you know, as I said, I like to buy old chestnut boards from a neighbor rather than to buy new. Like, and I drive two 20-year-old cars. Like, I'm kind of anti-consumerism, and a lot of like my livelihood was built on like making people want to buy things, making people want credit cards and whatever, car, golf clubs or anything else. And so once I saw Jack Dorsey, who I had grown like trusted a little bit from the old world back in the 2000s, Twitter days and everything else, and he was saying this, I was like, all right, there's something here. And so I got my resume up, and it was only a couple months later that I found Galloway. And it's Galloway, Galoy. It's actually a riff off of Galois, the Gauls. There's a sort of a fun backstory there. It goes back to like Roman times, right? There was this basically decentralized group of people who kept repelling the Romans despite having no central leader. So that's that. But anyway, it was that kind of gave me the impetus. And that was around, 2021. And I was lucky to find Galloway and been there ever since.
Hell yeah, man. Fuck, I needed to hear that. I love a good Bitcoin story, man. It's so funny. There's Bitcoin podcast haters that are out there like, oh, not another Bitcoin story. I mean, I'm just like, I feel like I can breathe again. Yes, tell me about your panic attack. It brings me back to the good old days of
Bitcoin. Yes. No, you.
I definitely felt that too. Yeah, absolutely, man. So good shit. Okay, that out of the way. Let's move on to Lightning. I want to ask you this. Crazy that you're good for you for being in fucking 1 year and then like jumping in and getting a job in Bitcoin, by the way. That's awesome, dude. Okay, so let's start here. In your own definition and or the given definition, which I don't know if it exists or not, what is the goal or promise or objective of Lightning at large?
In I'll give shorthand. As I mentioned, I see my role in Bitcoin. I called myself a community builder. I work in a quote unquote marketing capacity at Galloway. So I won't go into down the technical routes, but I'll give maybe the more social.
Yeah, absolutely.
Side. And so Lightning, the goal of Lightning, is really to build Bitcoin in such a way that you do not sacrifice any of the qualities of on-chain layer one Bitcoin, which is that, security, decentralization, right? But you do enable peer-to-peer instant global permissionless payments, right? So you maintain the qualities of Bitcoin that on the base layer, and then you build out in a layered fashion, so that you don't need to have a bunch of shit coins to be able to spend to buy a coffee, right? And so, I wasn't around in the early days of Lightning, but I do my digging and research into the past, and it was always right, like the joke, like Roger Ver and, with Bitcoin Cash and everything else, like there were people that were basically saying like, oh, we need to build a better Bitcoin to enable faster settlement and things like this. And the Lightning Network was a solution to say, actually, no, you don't. You build a layer on top that preserves the most important qualities of Bitcoin while also enabling peer-to-peer instant transactions.
So what do you think are the most important qualities of Bitcoin that are that if taken away would kind of destroy the idea? And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is my main issue with Lightning, here's my gripe, as it were, that I'm trying to figure out. Maybe you can help me walk through it, because I screamed on Spaces at somebody yesterday too, just like everything is stupid. This whole idea of custodial Lightning wallets. Let me start here. So can you explain what a custodial Lightning wallet is? So that, sure. or we both can. Yeah, if you can do that and explain that. Yeah. Explain what that.
Sure. So a custodial Lightning wallet is typically a mobile app or a desktop app. And it's an application that you have an account on that you can use to receive, send, and hold value in Bitcoin. Now, you do not have the keys to that Bitcoin. So in the traditional sense of not your keys, not your coin, it is not technically your coin. That coin is being held for you. But it has to be withdrawable to your own. In my own personal definition, you need to be able to withdraw it to your own custody. I'll stop there. We can kind of build on that.
Okay, so maybe that's just a glaring issue that I've missed right off the jump here, is that in any given custodial wallet, you can always, or any good custodial wallet, I suppose, can you always withdraw to on-chain at any given time if you want to? Is that a feature of most of these wallets, and then I guess of Blink as well?
Yeah, so I mean, there are apps that have come out and said, oh, you can buy Bitcoin. But I'm talking like, I think like when PayPal or Venmo or like Robinhood, I forget which apps, they're like, yeah, you can buy Bitcoin, but like you can't actually withdraw it, right? You'd have to sell it and then withdraw the fiat, right?
Yeah, like an ETF.
But yeah, no, I mean, Odell recently, you know, made me laugh. He was like, an ETF is a custodial wallet for suits, which like got a good chuckle out of me. But yeah, a custodial wallet is, you know, most, so if you're thinking Albi, Blink, Wad of Satoshi, like you can with receive and send over Lightning, you can receive and send over on-chain, right? And that is great. But like, I guess the thing that you want to think about with a custodial wallet is like, why would you tell somebody to use a custodial wallet versus a self-custodial Lightning wallet? And in which scenarios? And so we spend a ton of time thinking about this, as you might imagine. I mean, we're in spaces with folks like yourself, probably, you know, more often than not. And I think there's actually an article written by a colleague of mine called The Bullish Case for Bitcoin Custodians, which is, as you might imagine, quite triggering. It kind of blew up Bitcoin Twitter for a few days. But in it, there's a chart that kind of shows the two different ways that people come to Bitcoin, right? And most of the people that we interact with, everybody in Bitcoin Twitter, comes to Bitcoin from store of value first. And we learn about one of the qualities of one of the interesting angles of Bitcoin, right? Whether it's Austrian economics, whether it's the technology, whether it's right, like these different angles, hard money. But there's another way to come to Bitcoin, which like the class of 2022 and 2023 and 2024, there's many more of. And that is the person that comes to Bitcoin via Lightning and via digital payments, right? And so Bitcoin Beach was a place, so El Zante was a place where, you know, 80 to 90% of the people did not have access to bank accounts, right? So it was a physical cash economy up to a couple of years ago. And they said, well, wait a minute, if we have a mobile app, we can actually send Bitcoin to each other. So like when I buy lunch, I could like pay for it in Bitcoin. Like let's try that. And actually Nicolas, the Galaxy CEO, went down there and his vision was to create it, was to build a self-custodial wallet. But he realized like that the limitations of building a self-custodial Lightning wallet, or the hurdles rather, are significant, not just for the builder. Like, let me like first give props to Evan, Roy, Christian Decker, like all these, everyone that's like busting their ass, like making self-custodial Lightning better. Like I literally like, you know, throw my hands up, because like, it's badass, like what they're doing, because you're fighting a fight against a custodial wallet, which is a database transaction, right? And like, which can provide free transactions from person to person. However, if you're going to go to a place where no one in the community has ever used a bank account before, you can't quite say the same, you can't quite bring the same attitude of like, oh, all it is writing down 12 words, like, because it's not. And not to mention, like, even when I go down, I've been to El Zante for 3 years in a row now, and I open up Breeze, and I'm sitting there and I'm waiting for, you know, to synchronize the node, right? Or I, like, there are issues when you get into places with poor internet connectivity or with people with shitty phones that can't have a node on them. There are many limitations that lead you to a logical conclusion, which is the conclusion that I have, which is that a custodial wallet is a tool in the toolbox for Bitcoin adoption. And it's actually a really important tool. And I'll shut up here in a second and let it make this not a one-way conversation, but I do think that it is extremely important for custodians to meet a few criteria. They should be open source. they should educate their users on self-custody. It shouldn't be like, no, we're fine. Don't, like, you're good. Like, it's a way to start your Bitcoin journey is to receive 2,000 Satoshis. And like, it's not possible to receive 2,000 Satoshis in a self-custodial way, right? And so anyway, those are a couple of the things that I think about when I think about like, what value or why would you have a custodial wallet be a tool in your toolbox?
Okay, yeah, all fair points. I will just say you can absolutely send 2,000 sats on chain like that. But for sure you can. It's not, it would be non-economical, but it is possible. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Depending on the fee, right? Well,
it would definitely be non-economical most of the time, but it is possible. Yeah. You absolutely can do it. It comes to the dust limit, right? On whatever the mempool is. I think it's 532 or whatever now. So, and that's changeable too on any given node. You can set your dust limit and then you can set your own personal mempool to say, I want my dust limit to be one sat. And you can send one sat if you really want to, just if we're getting into the nitty gritty. And I'm
We have to. Like, and I'm glad you said that because I was actually having a chat in one of the Telegram groups today about sort of how pedantic Bitcoiners are. And I was like, you have to be, because you can't pretend like Fediment is self-custodial. I saw an article, Tony Giorgio, who, like, I haven't read the article yet, so I can't like argue with it quite yet. But I'm like, there are things that are self-custody. And to me, that means like you yourself is custodying, right? Yeah, and there are things that are open source. Cold Card is not open source, right? And like, I get blocked by NVK for saying saying that, you know? And like, so I agree that you have to be pedantic but I have to add to that, which is that I've was speaking with somebody recently who's been onboarding people to Bitcoin for 3 years, and he's been onboarding them to Moon Wallet because there's been a very pervasive thread of many Bitcoiners that have been like self-custody or bust. Like, how would you ever recommend a custodial solution that's like, you know, that you would never do that. And so they thought, oh, well, Moon is a Lightning-ish wallet. Let me get people into Moon. And this guy told me, and he's like, man, I have people reaching out to me regularly and they don't have enough sats to pay the fee to get the sats out of Moon Wallet. Right. And I actually tried to send a payment through Moon the other day, and it was cheaper to send on chain than through Lightning. And so you are correct. And thank you for pointing it out. While you can send somebody 2,000 sats, like, yeah, it doesn't give them the experience for them to go, oh, I want to learn more about this magic internet money thing. Rather, you can kind of gift them a headache.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I know Moon is a prime example. And one of my like, you know, just let me throw it out there that I fucking love Bitcoin more than anybody. Like, it's my favorite thing. I'm very Bitcoin, like, Bitcoin is everything, you know? Like, I'm not trying to shit on Bitcoin. My only problem is that, like, I want to poke holes in the issues that I see. And one of my main issues that I saw was all the stars everybody had in their eyes for Moon Wallet. It is a great example. I see the exact same thing happening for Wallet of Satoshi right now. And it happened with, like, it sort of happened with Phoenix too. Like, anytime a new wallet comes out, everybody says, oh, this is so great. We've solved fucking Lightning. Bitcoin is the greatest thing ever for payments. And I just, now I'm just hesitant to say that. It's like, for me, the most important thing, and I guess you've already kind of touched on this, but the most important thing is it's money that cannot be stolen from you, period. And if you have money that can be stolen from you and you're calling it Bitcoin, then you're just fundamentally wrong. And so even like, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if Galloway is a great company or the guys behind Moon or whoever, as long as your sats can be taken away in any form, then you're not using Bitcoin, or you're doing yourself a disservice by not fully using Bitcoin to its full potential, which is what bothers me. So now I'm like hesitant to even, I don't even want to bring up Lightning to anyone. This all started, I'll tell you what, and it started when I went to my barber the other day, and you know, barbershop, great place to talk about Bitcoin because, you know, you have them trapped there. So yeah. I'm chatting with him about Bitcoin and he's actually interested. And I was like, okay, sweet. Can I give you your tip I said in Bitcoin, I didn't say in sats. I don't think I got that far, but regardless. So I was like, okay, download Phoenix wallet and I'll send them to you on the, what's called the Lightning Network. And I had just kind of started fiddling around with Phoenix. Are you familiar with Phoenix?
I love Phoenix, yeah.
Okay, right on. So it was when we were in a high fee, and it was pretty high fee. It's like kind of bonkers. You remember a couple of weeks back, it was, I don't know, 500, 600 sats per V-byte or whatever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, admittedly didn't understand and still don't understand Lightning as much as I should have in order to get him to download it. So he downloaded it. I tried to send him sats and it wouldn't work. I tried sending 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 sats and it said, no, transaction cannot be completed. And I couldn't figure out why. It's because you need to open up, like it opens up its own channel and does a whole bunch of shit on the back end, which is very cool. But just if the whole idea of Lightning, is to onboard new people to the payment side of Bitcoin, then non-custodial wallets like Phoenix are not going to solve that problem because it doesn't work in a high fee environment. And then again, if the idea is to onboard people to Lightning via payments, custodial wallets once again is failing in that domain, given that you have to explain to them, okay, well, here's some Bitcoin, but it's not really yours yet. You need to send it somewhere else. So on both cases, I feel like Lightning is failing, whether it's custodial or non-custodial. You know what I mean? Which is bothering me. So like, I'm trying to figure out. So what I ended up doing is I got him to download Blue Wallet. I sent him a tip that was way too fucking much. Like, but I didn't want to make this. I was just like, I'm sending this guy motherfucking Bitcoin. Like, I don't care. This is happening. I can't remember what it was. It was too much. But I'm like, whatever. Here you go, man. Thanks for the haircut. It's cool. I stress the importance of writing down the words and, you know, having your seed phrase hidden. And this is actually what the Bitcoin is in these words. And you can, you know, and all that stuff, which I personally think is the important aspect of Bitcoin. Here's money on chain that you have access to so long as you control these words. If you lose those words, your money's gone, you know? And then with Lightning, you say, if you have your money on Wallet of Satoshi or Blink or whatever, if it goes down, you have an account and you can fucking call somebody, which once again just defeats the fucking purpose. And it just, I like, try and explain to me how that doesn't defeat the purpose of Bitcoin. Like, are we really doing new people, like specifically new people coming in? Like you said, like you go to a country that's, what's the word, third world or developing economies, you go there and you say, oh, Bitcoin's this new thing that's going to save you. Here's a bunch of fucking custodial wallets. All you've done at that point is become the new central banker. I could, like, not me personally, but if I was smart enough, I could whip up an app, say it's a Bitcoin custodial wallet. Really all it is a database that I control on the back end. And then I get people to send me sats. I have a bunch of sats on chain somewhere, and then I have I'm asking you a question here. Yeah. Could I not do this? Could I not whip up an app, get people to send me sats, me personally, and then have a bunch of accounts for Andrew and Johnny and Timmy, and then just on my back end, I just say, okay, well, Timmy's sending Johnny 14 sats, so I'll send it on mine. Meanwhile, no, actually, Bitcoin is moving around. And then, if you extrapolate that further, what is stopping, and I don't know the tech side of this, and I know you said you're not really a tech guy, so if you don't know the answer to this question, that's fine too. But what's stopping, say, Wallet of Satoshi, or Blink, or whoever, a custodial wallet, from just upping the amount of sats on their given ecosystem, right? Like if Blink is a custodial wallet and you have a community and they all say, I have, you know, why can't you inflate the supply of sats on your own specific app? I guess that's my question. What's stopping that from happening? And again, if you don't know the technical answer, then fair enough.
No, I mean, these are great concerns. They're important. You should be bringing them up, and companies that offer custodial services should have good answers to them. The short version is, yes, you can build your own wallet. Yes, you can tell people that they have a certain amount of sats. Yes, you know, a custodial service could pretend that they have Bitcoin that they don't have. You know, Blink is built on the Galloway stack, as well as, I don't know if you've heard of Bitcoin Jungle, but it's a community in Costa Rica that they built a wallet, Bitcoin Jungle app, also on the Galloway stack. So there's a couple things that you want to look for if you're going to introduce somebody to, you asked a few questions, so I'm going to try and like chip through them. But
yeah, sorry, I'm a bad interviewer, dude.
They're great ones. It's more of like a few lines of thought that will kind of tick through. But open source is important, and actually somebody asked recently on Twitter, like, why does it matter if a custodial wallet is open source? Right? Because you're trusting them that they're not going to rug you anyways. And well, if a custodial wallet is open source, or rather, if a custodial wallet is closed source, you're trusting their competency, their ability to not make technical errors, as well as their integrity, right? But if you're using a open source custodial wallet, you can actually check their technical competency, but you are trusting their integrity. Along those roads, there are other things that you look at, like, are they Bitcoin only, right? Like, let's not be recommending somebody to use a custodial wallet that's, you know, messing in shit coins, because we know that is very, distracting or antithetical, depending on, you know, where you sit. And then there's some other things as well. And I think sort of maybe before going into like the last couple of things, like when you onboard somebody to Bitcoin, say it is your taxi driver, your barber might be a good example, but your barber, you have 30 minutes, right? Like you said, which is funny, because I actually saw like three people onboarding barbers a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, what is it with you, these Bitcoiners? Like they're sitting in a chair and you know, it's like, they must be insufferable. So you tell somebody, I'm going to send you this thing. It's very important. It's valuable. I'm going to send you a little bit, and you need to save these 12 words. Even for a 30 or 45 minute haircut, you're not going to get them far enough into the rabbit hole where they understand the gravity of those 12 words, right? So, and you might be their fourth haircut of seven or whatever, and they fold that little piece of paper up, they stick it in their wallet, it goes through the wash or whatever. Like, a question that I kind of think about sometimes is, when you're introducing to somebody to the concept of self-custody before they understand why self-custody is important, are you giving them the right ability to set themselves up on the right foot? And I know that, you know, I've seen quite a bit recently people saying, a couple of friends called me. They lost the, you know, I gave them some Bitcoin a couple of years ago and they lost the words, right? And I don't know the answer to this, like being like, okay, well, if you onboard them to a custodial wallet or you give them 12 words, you know, say you do a test, you can say like, pick like 50 people and you give them 12 words and 50 people and you get them on a smattering of custodial wallets, like, and check in with them a year, 2 years down the road, which ones still have that Bitcoin or are able to access that Bitcoin and which aren't. It could be a fun experiment. So yeah, there is that, which is like the concept of orange pilling is a little bit of a misnomer, right? Like, you really have to travel that journey yourself. And so I do believe that a custodial Lightning wallet is onboarding somebody to Bitcoin in kind of a, swimmies or training wheels type of way. If you look at like BTC Sessions or Joe Nakamoto or Paco de la India, these people that travel the world working with people, like they use Phoenix, they use Breeze, and all the other tools. But typically what they say is, hey, download this wallet. I'm going to send you some Satoshis. Satoshis have value. And, you know, I'm going to give you the 2-minute primer on Bitcoin. Now, I'm also going to, you know, luckily for the guys that have, you know, 50,000 Twitter followers, but they're like, I want to share your Lightning address so that people can also send you Bitcoin. And if you end up being interested and actually stacking a little bit of money that you wouldn't want to lose, that's more than pocket money, then it's time to upgrade and call me back, right? And I'll get you upgrading. And I know that they actually do this, and they follow up with these people and they get them into self-custodial wallets. And so I think that, like, for the people that come to Bitcoin from a store of value angle, you can start with self-custodial Lightning, because it's more of a toy. The primary job that Bitcoin does for you is storage of funds over time, right? Store of value. But if you are a barber and one of your customers comes in and says, hey, here's this thing, like you don't have value to store yet, right? You don't have value in Bitcoin to store yet. So you're really in this, like, sort of introductory state. And I do think it is important for anybody who is orange pilling anybody to make that clear at the very beginning, which is, hey, I'm going to introduce you to this thing. I'm going to put you in the starter track, and I want you to continue the journey. And so in the Blink wallet, there's an education section so you can learn about Bitcoin, which is what a lot of people like about why they recommend it, is they can be like, I can send a cab driver, you know, $1 worth of Bitcoin, and then tell them, hey, go in the earn section. You can, like, you know, learn about Bitcoin, and then move to self-custody. And there's one other thing. There's a guy named Oaken. He's out of Namibia, and he has this slide. So he gives these Bitcoin education presentations, and he's orange pilled. He's onboarded like a couple restaurants near him and a bunch of different people. And this slide says, download both wallets, and it has two QR codes, Blink and Blue Wallet. And, like, me and everybody else in here in Twitter is, like, beating the shit out of each other, arguing whether or not it's okay to onboard somebody to a custodial wallet. Meanwhile, you have this guy who's, like, in Africa being like, hey guys, download two applications and I'm going to teach you, like, when to use which, right? And like, I think that is literally the perfect answer, which is, like, teach people that there are multiple ways to use Bitcoin. And maybe I'm going to try and come around to the first point you made, which is, like, the purpose of Bitcoin. Like, if you can't send your barber some money in a self-custodial Lightning and you have to onboard him, like, what's the point? And, like, I think the point is that on-chain Bitcoin, it exists now. It doesn't have to be the only way. You don't only have to interact with Bitcoin in a self-custodial way. Like, I believe that 10 years into the future, like, I personally will have multiple wallets, just like I might, being in the States, like, have multiple bank accounts and a IRA or a, you know, 401k. And, like, I have, like, money in different places for different reasons and for different levels of security. And, like, you don't want to touch your cold storage often. You don't want to, like you have your maximum security sats, and then you have your sats for getting a haircut. And in my mind, like, I don't think a custodian is actually a bad word. I think it's just, like, a useful tool built on top of, like, money that can't be fucked with. Do you know what I mean? So, like, if the base layer is kept alive, right? Because it's either going to be everything or it's going to be dead, right? If Bitcoin can survive, then I believe that custodial wallets have a place, at least, you know, for me and for many other people.
Yeah, that's kind of that's what I've been struggling with, is if Bitcoin succeeds, then is it just doomed to become another thing that people, like, there'll be the hardcore Bitcoiners that have their sats and cold storage, or, you know, that understand how the chain works. And then there'll be the majority of people that just end up using custodial wallets and are transacting sats simply because all the other monies have died and they're all useless. And so I guess, yeah, my question to you would be more of a philosophical one, is what do you see How do you see the future of Bitcoin playing out? Do you think it'll be everyone will be using Bitcoin? Do you think, like, is that what you'd hope for? Because, and I ask because I kind of go back and forth on this question myself. I think a lot about, like, gold bugs, right? And for, I don't know, hundreds of years, well, at least 100 years since gold has been not the money, there's all these dudes saying, yeah, gold is the way, it's the best form of money, but nobody fucking uses it. They just hoard it and they store it, and, you know, their value goes up because the dollar is devaluing. So if you hold gold, you quote unquote make more dollars. You're just storing your value, right? Store of value, that's the term. But so my question is, with Bitcoin, I could see it going that same way, where there's just going to be, you know, a handful of Bitcoiners that, like we have now, that end up storing their value, their wealth, their money in Bitcoin. And then the question becomes, this is the other thing. Again, preface, I fucking love Bitcoin. Don't shit on me, anybody that's listening to this. But it's like, if you're just looking for a good payment system, is Lightning, oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to say this, is Lightning better than, you know, the standard fiat rails or any of these other given fucking shit coins that are out there? If you're going to be talking about, well, it's custodial, that's the whole premise of all shit coins, is that somebody controls them. So Lightning is, like, Bitcoin is in a league of its own. But Lightning is in competition with every other shitcoin and with every other fiat. So how does it survive? The only way, well, I guess that's my question for you. How would you?
Yeah. No. It's a great question. I think that there's, like, Bitcoin adoption is, it's kind of like a bird's nest of use cases and people and needs and developments. It's not clean. It's kind of, there's like a meme where people, it's like, people think that I just ride my bike from beginning to end and I'm like, you know, wealthy because I have Bitcoin, when in fact, like, you're going through the swamp and you're going through the woods or whatever. And, like, I believe that we are at the stage in Bitcoin, I'll call it Bitcoin UX, that was like the first days of WordPress with building websites on the internet, where, like, WordPress probably wasn't good, but it was kind of better than this thing called Tripod or Lycos or fucking Prodigy or whatever, like, things you might otherwise put something on the internet with. And, like, you know, the underlying internet had to be better, and browsers had to be improved, and then the content management systems had to be improved. And, you know, so there's, like, these many different interfacing layers that are all in a little bit of a state of development at the same time. It feels like that's where we are. And, like, I don't think that we're going to be here forever. Like I said, like, what Zeus is doing with, you know, being able, you know, something like a Lightning address, being able to receive payments offline, right? This is something that is very hard to do in a self-custodial way. Roy from Breeze wrote about it today, in a self-custodial way, right? Whereas with Blink, you can have a QR code and you can put it at the front of your barbershop and your customers can just scan it and pay you, right? Any time of day. You don't have to have your phone open. You don't have to be online. And so whereas Blink solved this problem, and, you know, shout out, like, was it Andre Neves and, like, some of the, you know, some of the guys that have been working on, like, Lightning Address and LNURL and Fiat Jeff, like, this is something that a lot of people are like, oh, like, you have to use a web server, like, LNURL, you know, it's just custodial. And it's like, dude, it solves a problem for some people in the world that allow individuals to transact. And you know what? Like, it enables people to send the best money in the world back and forth to each other. And that money can find its way into the person's custody on the other side, self-custody on the other side of the line. And so, like, the sort of medium of exchange use case is messy right now. There's a spec called Bolt 12 for Lightning that would basically enable some of these payments, like offline payments and asynchronous payments, to happen in a fully self-custodial way. And so I kind of see like a lot of the tools that we're using today, people use because they're valuable, but they could be replaced by more private, more self-custodial solutions. And they are being replaced by those with, you know, there's amazing builders building all sorts of shit. And so if you're one other thing that we looked at in the this article that was, you know, the bullish case for Bitcoin custodians was this like kind of play on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Called it Satoshi's hierarchy of needs. And like the idea is, you know, for you or me that has access to any different type of fiat payment app, like we don't really have pain when it comes to like ability to transact, right? You know, until we get on the wrong side of some political debate, I guess. but anyways, like most people in the world don't have those these problems, right? They're like, why would I just have credit cards and fucking mobile app pay and all this bullshit? Like, I don't need Bitcoin to be, you know, fast and send back and forth. But a lot of people in the world do have that problem. And so the idea of saying, okay, custodial is not Bitcoin, it's no good if it's not, you know, fully private and stuff like that. It's like, well, everybody has their own like levels of needs that they have, whether it's immunity to betrayal of trust or, you know, requirements to be fully pseudonymous or something like this. And so all of but the toolbox is like growing. Like all these different developers are building these tools at the same time with, you know, the guys with the Mutiny, you know, watching what Fedimint is doing and what people are doing with Fedimint. And so, I just think we're in this like middle messy time. And let's even go back like or zoom out one layer of like, OK, you have Lightning and then you have all this other shit that people are trying, like Arc and Liquid. And like people are like, okay, how do we like where there's pain, like developers flock to pain and try to alleviate that pain or solve that problem. And so like where Lightning gets difficult, there are some people that are just kind of bashing through and solving those problems on Lightning. And there are other people that are saying, we can solve this similar problem with Liquid or something else. And so where does that take us like in the future? I just think that like the free market is just going to have a field day with this. I think that like people are going to use these products. People are going to like many different things are going to happen. Some of these are going to be people are going to use products that fit their own like need set, right? Whether it's privacy, whether it's speed, whether it's reliability, you know, whatever, simplicity, UX. And like some of these products will kind of make it into in my mind, like I'm hoping that in, you know, whatever it is, 10 or 15 years, like you could travel the world very easily just spending only Bitcoin. Like you could live on a personal Bitcoin standard, I think that one of the things that like I believe is that the idea of a Bitcoin custodian, or like rather let's actually not a custodian, but the idea of a bank is going to change, right? Because when you have Bitcoin and you have the ability to send between any two people or two organizations, like you don't need the banking system as it exists today. But like with something like the Galois stack, we used Home Depot and Lowe's earlier. Say I'm Home Depot. And, you know, we're 5 or 6 years in the future. And I say, you know, Home Depot has always been like, I want to be innovative, right? Like they're, you know, good website and, you know, digital transformation. Like we want to accept Bitcoin and use Bitcoin. Like Home Depot could fork the Galois stack and be their own bank. And so like we talk a lot about the sovereign individual as Bitcoiners. But at Galois, we talk a little bit about what about the sovereign organization, right? Like, so imagine Home Depot has their own Home Depot wallet. Their customers can keep $500 in there and earn something, you know, get rid of all the like shitty rewards programs and allow people to earn some sats for having, you know, some amount of money they're going to spend at that store in that store's wallet. Or the employees of Home Depot could get, you know, paid all to that store's custodial wallet and then withdraw the funds to their own desired self-custody at whatever time they want. And so like, I can kind of see this future where instead of 40,000 banks and central banks that kind of control the flow of money around the world, you could have millions of banks at all different sizes with different security postures or different privacy sort of postures and in different ways. And like, a lot of them would have proof of reserves and some of them would be more sketchy and like some people would get rugged and like all this stuff. But I do think that, you know, I think that the custodial wallet like will probably still have a use case at that time. But I'm like super interested to see it because I mean, I use quite a bit of these different wallets as much as I can, at least to try them out. But yeah.
Wow, man, if we go into a world where Home Depot has their own stack that they pay their employees in Home Depot wallet app, that's a fucking nightmare. I hope we don't go to that, dude. Honestly, that sounds horrible to me. I think that, I don't know, I think that fundamentally defeats the purpose of Bitcoin. But again, I go back and forth on
Do you think that Home Depot should have Bitcoin on its balance sheet?
I don't think it can. This is kind of a philosophical question too, okay. Right? Because Bitcoin can only be controlled by people. Home Depot isn't a person. We haven't even touched on El Salvador, but like people say El Salvador is buying Bitcoin. Like, no, you know, like Bukele is buying Bitcoin or whoever controls the keys. It needs to be a person. The whole idea that companies or countries can own things is like just kind of fundamentally flawed idea. Maybe in the fiat world, you can say like Canada has, well, it's all negative dollars, right? Like the States is $34 trillion in debt. Like that's the money that the States has. Okay. That makes sense. But you can't have a company that owns Bitcoin. Like even MicroStrategy, it doesn't make sense. Like somebody, some human has to be behind that. And I suppose you could say the multi-sig argument and be like, okay, well, the company is like these four dudes. Like that's fine, but it's still people. So it comes down to trust, right? It's like who's controlling the keys? Who's controlling the coins? That's all it comes down to. So do I think Home Depot should have Bitcoin on their balance sheet? I think whoever the CEO, I don't know who the CEO of Home Depot is off the top of my head, but I think if he's a smart dude, he would just stack himself and have his own money saved up because that's what you can do now. I don't know how these big corporations work. Like when Home Depot goes to make some major purchase, they're switching from buying DeWalt drills and instead they're going to stock Milwaukee drills or whatever. I know that they stock both, but like there's a person behind that. I don't know what the protocol is for how they make those decisions and how that money gets moved. But on a Bitcoin standard, there's going to be one person that's going to be able to control the coins and move the coins where they want to. So I don't know. It gets kind of fuzzy there where, like, companies can't be sovereign by definition of what sovereign means, right? Like, it's a human trait, in my opinion. So I just don't see that there. And that's my
I feel like that's a huge can of worms because, I mean, what is a company but stories and norms, right? actually, there's the book called, I think it's called How Innovation Works, and he goes deep into this. And I remember being like, oh, man, that's deep. Because, yeah, what is a company? There is no company. There's no spoon. There's no, but I mean, okay, there's an entity that somebody wrote some sort of charter for and registered it with a government, I guess. Or it's rather maybe that's even too like traditional. Like it, there's a group of people that have some assets. Let's use instead like a community bank or something like that. But like essentially there's an organization of people that have assets under their control, and they have to ensure that those assets maintain some sort of value over time, whether it's Home Depot or it's a church. And Bitcoin can be a tool for maintaining value over time, right? And so, yeah, I mean, again, we can kind of like go deep down a rabbit hole, but I do think that like in my view of where this thing goes, this is what's going to happen. One thing that I thought was a bigger deal than maybe anybody made of it, for me, it was like this kind of weird thing, which was the KPMG report that was like Bitcoin and ESG, like, and it was like a 10-page report by one of these big four consultants, and they're basically telling their clients, who Home Depot is probably one of them, that hey, like Bitcoin is good for environmental social governance issues. Have you thought about how Bitcoin can help your ESG strategy yet? And like when I read that, like this is how they signed off the entire report, and I was like, holy shit, it's like the narrative is changing. And when narratives shift in the consultancy world, so you're talking like Boston Consulting Group and Forrester and Accenture and KPMG, these guys are like flocking to be the company who writes the most shit about this and sells it to the biggest companies in the world. And so like I lived through this when I was in my agency days. And the big thing was there's a couple, I lived through a couple of these, like these eras, which are, I don't know, 7 to 10 years long, where they go, digital transformation is the thing. Like, what's your digital transformation strategy? And they will write 100 pages broken up into, you know, 14 PDFs that say like, you need to figure out your digital transformation strategy. And this will get on the desks of all the big CEOs, CMOs, CTOs, CIOs, or whatever. And I can kind of, my guess is that this is going to happen with Bitcoin in the next couple of years, where, and with the ETF and everything else that's like kind of pumping it, right? Once Larry Fink says like, we're good to go, then like, okay, fire up all of the, you know, the analysts. And I do believe that there's going to be these companies are going to say, now you can argue they're not actually using or holding Bitcoin or whatever, because there's people who have keys and access to that Bitcoin and whatever. But I do think that that's going to be a legitimate use of Bitcoin, and that more companies are going to start accepting it. More companies are going to start holding it. And again, like it kind of circles back to my conclusion, which is like companies that decide to go big rather than just like, we're going to issue a press release and we're Adidas and you can buy sneakers with Bitcoin. But like companies that decide like, you know what, this is actually like MicroStrategy is a good example, but they're going to say, actually, we're going to get rid of our rewards points. And now when you buy a Starbucks coffee, we're going to pay you, 75 Satoshis. And if you keep, you know, Bitcoin in the Starbucks wallet, then, you know, we'll pay you a Satoshi per day or something. And like, I don't know, like you may not agree with that future. It's one of many potential futures, but like, I believe that, I believe in a future where, and I think that that's, I mean, that's what a Bitcoin standard in my mind kind of looks like, which is just like, everybody's starting to realize that like Bitcoin is a better asset to hold. And therefore everybody's competing for to hold your Bitcoin. And like, as a user, your job is to go down the journey and not let other people hold your Bitcoin unless you deem it to be a good use of your Bitcoin otherwise. And so I might say, oh, I live in a community and there's a local community bank that rewards me personally somehow for using their wallet. And it may have, you know, local perks at my coffee shop or whatever. And I might keep $100 on that wallet and use it locally because I have some affinity to that group. But it's not like I'm not using it like a savings account, right? I'm using it like a payments wallet. And so, yeah, I think that there's a lot of building an interesting kind of social interactions that can happen in that way. Well, I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting thoughts, man. I guess my main thing is any big corporation right now, if they don't start buying Bitcoin, they're going to go bankrupt, like full stop, right? Because they're going to need the money that is a good money. If Home Depot decides to not accept Bitcoin, eventually they go bankrupt because they'll only have you can have $1 billion dollars of fiat. So it's in their best interest to start stacking sats. Obviously, they're going to have to. That's inevitable. It's not something I think too much of because smart businessmen will realize like, oh, I need money. Bitcoin is money. So I need to sell things for money. I'm going to sell things for Bitcoin. That's fine. I'm all for that. Your idea of these companies having their own wallets where they can offer rewards, that's kind of sparks up red flags for me because that sounds a lot like the BlockFi's of the world or whatever that says, oh, you know, give us your Bitcoin and then we'll give you something back in return. That only lasts so long as they have something to give back. And so that will inevitably, in my opinion, that'll inevitably end up in a rug pull of some sort. Like even if you have $100 on your Home Depot Bitcoin wallet, and they're giving out one, even if it's one sat a day, we're talking about a finite supply here. They're going to run out. I guess in theory, if they keep, it gets kind of weird, right? Because if they sell stuff, they get sats, they give them away. It's a weird balance. So we'll see if that happens. Yeah. I personally won't. Like the way I like using Bitcoin, man, and this is my thing. Like this past weekend, I installed the backsplash for another Bitcoiner. He had Bitcoin that was in his control. I finished the job. He sent me Bitcoin. Now it's in my control. End of transaction, right? It's not like, hey, I'll give you fucking 100,000 sats while you're doing my backsplash. It's like, no, man. Job's done. Money is transferred. End of transaction. The end. The whole idea of like letting somebody else hold your money is very fiat thinking in my opinion. And so, yeah, companies will probably try and do it, but we'll just watch them all fail. I think that'll happen. I do want to, we're already going, but I do want to kind of shift back to the idea of, I want to get a little bit positive here, and I'm hoping that you can do this for me, to go back into the smaller community idea, sort of like what I was just talking about with the backsplash, in that, in this lightning world where, and maybe, so the reason I had you on specifically is because of Blink Wallet, because of Bitcoin Beach. We should probably give a quick little blurb about what Bitcoin Beach actually is. But I'd love to know, like, if you've actually been there, like, feet on the ground in the area, have you, you said you've been there three times over the past 3 years, if I recall correctly. So what has the, my question is, what has the development been from year one till now? What have the positives been? What have the negatives been? What do you think can improve? What has worked? What hasn't worked? Have you seen actual positive change? And on top of that, I know I'm throwing a lot of questions on you. Do you think that Bitcoin is working the way as it is intended? Or are the people, like, this is my real fucking question. This is what I really care about. The people that didn't know what Bitcoin was, and then somebody came along and said, here, use this Lightning wallet. Have those people put in the work to understand what Bitcoin is now that it's been 3 years? And are they self-custodying or are they just using Lightning because what the fuck? They don't have another choice.
Yeah. I'm happy to report that I just saw a picture from El Zante of this beautiful little building called the Bitcoin Hardware Store. And this is built by a guy named Ronnie. I think he's Canadian, who was Salvadoran by descent and moved back there, given all the positive happenings there over the past years. And so now I don't know of anyone anywhere that's doing this, but, and I don't know if Radio Shack is a thing that you ever experienced. But growing up, there was a store called Radio Shack, and you would always, that was your, you'd go to your, for your electronics. And so anyway, this guy's building a hardware store dedicated to Bitcoin self-custody devices. And I just thought that was the most fucking awesome idea, because learning about self-custody requires a little bit of guidance. Where do you get it? A lot of the, if you're in Latin America or Africa, like the taxes and customs and shipping, and it's a nightmare. I've personally sent a Blockstream Jade to a friend in Africa because he couldn't get them kind of through directly. And so, yeah, that's kind of my little story just from today, which is like 3 years ago, you had a community say, maybe we'll try this Bitcoin thing. And for the most part, I mean, first of all, they started using on-chain. They were buying like $3 lunches with on-chain Bitcoin at first. Then they moved into custodial Lightning wallets. But now they have the first, to my knowledge, Bitcoin hardware store popping up. And so I think that they're a little ahead of us. A little bit about my experience. And I like Bitcoin Beach grew out of a project called Hope House. And there's actually an American who used to go down there with his family every year, ended up buying a house down there. There's El Zante is a great surf spot where surfers have gone for a while now. He and some of the local kids built a community, around in a building called Hope House. And the idea of Hope House was to have educational programs, so English classes, computer classes, surfing every Saturday, surf para todos, and essentially just activities to keep kids out of gangs. Because for the most part, if you were in El Salvador 10 years ago or more, like the most logical path for you was you're going to leave and go somewhere else, another country, or you're going to end up in a gang. And so they had these programs, and that was started in 2009 or 10, I think. And it's just an amazing story. Jorge and Roman, and Irvin were, kind of core to this program with Mike. And, so somebody who I think either knew Mike, heard about this program, was like, wanted to help it, and make a donation, but basically was like, there's a stipulation, like, to this donation is like, I don't want you to just, it's Bitcoin and I don't want you to just like sell it and dump it for fiat. Like I want you to use it and see if you can like use it as money. And so they started off on this experiment, and that was in, I think like 2019 or so. And so between 2019, 2020, and today, I've been that back 3 years. The Bitcoin law was passed in 2021. Right. And so, Bitcoin Beach, the community, and Bitcoin Beach wallet was already there. People were already using it kind of heavily in the community. But then the law was passed. They built a wallet called Chivo, which was sort of the government wallet. And they launched it, I mean, very quickly. It was months after the announcement of the law went into effect. They launched Chivo. They gave everybody $30 worth of Bitcoin, and they put up 30 or a bunch of ATMs around the country. And that's when I first went down for the first Adopting Bitcoin conference. And I mean, it was amazing. It's an amazing experience to go somewhere and be able to spend sats everywhere you go. I mean, in El Zante, not across El Salvador at first. But when I went to El Zante, the security guard helped get my luggage up and into the room, and I was like, hey, do you have, can I send you some sats? And he was like, sure. And I got his Lightning address, and I sent him some sats. There was musicians playing on the street, and they had a little QR code, and I send them some sats, buy lunch, send sats. And it's literally magic, because it is faster and easier than a credit card when it works, right? It doesn't always work. And we talked about all the issues with Lightning. So, but it was great. Now adoption does not happen in a straight line, kind of like the meme I was talking about. A lot of what happened in El Salvador is okay, everybody got $30. They went and they cashed it out to fiat and they went along with their day. And or they said, oh, this is a Bukele thing. This is a government thing. What is this, Bitcoin, right? Like, so I think that there's definitely was a missed opportunity in the education along with the rollout. Like, it was like they rolled out a wallet, they gave people money. So I do think it was a missed opportunity there. But there are natural bottom-up organizations that have been built to fill that gap. So Mi Primer Bitcoin is one of the, I think, most amazing projects like ever in Bitcoin. I mean, they built essentially a textbook, which is beautifully made about Bitcoin and nicely printed. It started in Spanish. They've since made it to English, which allowed it to be translated into like a bunch of different languages, and it's being used around the world. But they're now working with like schools. They're in schools. They're teaching people Bitcoin. So I think like it's kind of like, I don't know, when you look back in time, it's going to look like some hero's journey where like, oh, this big, amazing thing. And then this pit of despair. And then now they're pulling themselves back. And so if you look at, I think El Zante is an amazing place. Like, I highly recommend anybody go. It's a little bit of a destination that you go as a Bitcoiner to check it out. And they're really, really cool people, there. They've done a great job over the years. It's not all roses, right? Like, I actually had a panel at Adopting Bitcoin with a core dev who lived in El Zante for a while. And he brought up some of the challenges with it, which is like, when I went, I was like, wow, every time I come back, they're just building more. Like, people are improving the streets and building buildings. And it's just like, this development is great. And it's like, okay, but who's buying those properties? Like, big money is coming in, gentrification, you know the story. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It's like, you know, it happens all over the place. And so there are challenges with change that happen in whether it's Bitcoin Beach or anywhere else. But on a whole, it appears to me that El Salvador is completely changing for the better. And that we will look back 10 years from now and it'll be an amazing story in history of El Salvador going from murder capital of the world to a sort of a destination. And that almost puts it in a not proper light, because it's not just a destination for like tourism, but like a place that just like people want to be, people want to stay, people want to build businesses. I do think, and I've talked to even like at random bars, speaking to local kids that are 21 that are like, yeah, Bitcoin, I don't know about that, whatever. And then I get into these hour long conversations and they have these nuanced takes about the government and about the gangs and everything. Like, I'm super bullish on El Salvador in general. Last thing about El Salvador that's worth noting is this other community. So I mentioned at the top of the call, there's, you know, I'll call it 30 communities around the world that are kind of trying to replicate this Bitcoin circular economy experience. And many are doing it extremely well. There are many places that you can go and live on Bitcoin. In Guatemala, Bitcoin Lake. You can go to Bitcoin Beach, Brazil, and in Jericoacoara, Brazil. And in South Africa, you can go to Bitcoin Ekasi. But one of the newest projects launched like 8 months ago in a town called Berlin in El Salvador. It's this mountain town, and a few different Bitcoiners, this couple went and they said, like, this is just an amazing community. We can build, we can like live here and we can kind of build with the community. It's a very vibrant and strong community. And all these different Bitcoiner expats from other places also kind of relocated there. People from Australia, people from the States, people from Mexico, people from Slovakia. It's amazing. It's this melting pot of Bitcoiners. And in the past 8 months, they've onboarded, I believe they've passed 100 businesses, and they have a Bitcoin education center where people come every, you know, multiple times a week. They teach English classes so that, you know, the local hotel owner can, you know, communicate with people traveling through. And like, it's just an amazing story in the making. And I think that it shows the potential of, like community, a community that is, that sees value in learning about Bitcoin. And so, you know, many of the merchants that they've onboarded are start off with a custodial Lightning wallet. But like they have this Bitcoin education center in the middle of town, and the people that go there are like, these are privacy and self-custody oriented individuals that are dead set on teaching all the different ways to use Bitcoin. And so I do think that like, the more communities pop up, the more that they share and take notes from each other, and the faster the feedback loop will be from like, hey, download a custodial wallet, let me send you some sats, to like what I shared you about Oaken earlier, like, hey, download these two applications. Now, when someone wants to pay with Bitcoin, show them this custodial wallet because it's going to be easy and reliable. Once you earn $40, call me and I'm going to come show you how to withdraw that to your self-custody. And so like, yeah, these communities around the world, I mean, this is kind of what the space that I exist in, as I mentioned at the very beginning, like I'm kind of feel like I'm a community builder. I very well connected with a lot of these communities. And yeah, it's a very different lens than I think, you know, your specific perspective. They're like, they see Bitcoin as a tool to connect a previously almost like, in many cases, not all, but like a forgotten corner of the world that was just like, that literally did not have, you know, any, not only did they not have like the ability to earn via digital payments or via a global network, but they don't have value to store. Like I'll maybe leave it on one quote from Mike Peterson that kind of shook me when I first heard it. When I first joined Galloway was, you know, there are people in El Zante that save money by buying cinder blocks because they know that the value, that the price of cinder blocks just, it just goes up, right? And so if they're like, oh, I want to add like an extra like little, like a room on my house, I'll just, if I have an extra $20, I'm going to buy a little stack of cinder blocks rather than hold the dollars, because when the United States, you know, decides to print more money, like, and send stimmy checks to everybody, like Salvadorans aren't getting stimmy checks despite the fact that they use USD, right? They're just getting the short end of the stick. And so that story like shook me, right? And so I think it's just so powerful. And I laugh about this ETF thing because, I mean, based on what I work on and the people I work with, like, you know, ETFs are just like yet another way for people who already have good banking access to like get Bitcoin again, right? And they're still not, I mean, they're doing it, but like they're still not understanding it. Whereas like you go to Argentina or Peru and you're like, hey, here's a thing that like nobody can make more of. And you know, you can teach somebody in New York City how to speak Portuguese and charge them like more money than you would make in a week, which is still half as much as they would pay for somebody locally. And they're like, they instantly understand it. And so I just think it's super bullish on these communities. Like, if and when, you know, banking system collapse, like I just wait to see. Like these communities wouldn't miss a beat because you already have, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50% of the community that's like on the path, on the journey, right? And so I do think it's a really, really bright future.
Hell yeah, man. That's positive. That's upbeat. I appreciate it. That's good to hear. I do have one final question for you then, which actually just came to mind. My whole reason for why I wanted to do this show with you is I went to a birthday party. I have a 5-year-old son. He went to a birthday party for a kid that I didn't know very well, but I was talking to the dad. It was like a big party. And sure enough, the dad says, oh, we're going to El Salvador in a couple weeks. I was like, no way. I had already introduced, well, I introduced myself as a Bitcoiner. And then he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to El Salvador soon. I was like, oh, shit, how much do you know about Bitcoin? He's like, nothing really, but I know it's a thing down there. So I was like, okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. And so he's going in 2 weeks. And I really didn't know, like, where to direct him, what to tell him. So let me just put you on the spot and say you were in my situation. You're talking to a guy that doesn't know anything about Bitcoin. He's going to El Salvador. Reason being is his wife is El Salvadorian. So they're going to, like, visit family. I don't know if they're going to El Zonte. Unlikely, right? They're probably going to some other place in El Salvador. What would you suggest to somebody in his situation to start, where to jump off, what to do, how to be involved, or what would your suggestion be to somebody like that?
Yeah, for sure. First, I would tell him to get a Lightning wallet, and you can trade some P2P fiat and get him set up so he doesn't have to figure it out once he's down there. So load him up with some Bitcoin. I think depending on what, he's probably not hanging out on Twitter with everybody however, I would definitely try and connect him with some people and events down there. The town that I mentioned, Berlin, is, I know, would be an amazing experience. As would El Zonte. And so, in your position, knowing somebody like myself, like I can give him, a couple people to reach out to try to make it easier. If I was a random person saying, sending a random person down there, I do think that I would advise, like, the perception and usage of Bitcoin in El Salvador varies greatly depending on where you are. You're not going to go down there and just be surrounded with people who are, like, super excited about Bitcoin. So you do have to kind of, I would say, seek it out a little bit. I will say that, like, you can pay your, I forget what it's called, but, like, country visa customs entry fee, which is like $12, and with Bitcoin. And I did it last year, so a year and a couple months ago. And they were fumbling with the device, and they showed me an on-chain address. And I was like, can you make me a Lightning address, please? Right. And they're like, I don't know. Like, they don't know how to use the machine. And so I paid on chain. And they, like, let me walk away. It was like zero conf or whatever. And I was like, okay, that was a little bit weird, but fine. And this year I went and I was like, Lightning. And the woman was like, huge smile, big thumbs up. Yes, Lightning. And she, like, made me a Lightning invoice. And so, like, it's happening, man. Like, a country is, like, adopting new money. And so it's a little bit clunky in places, and it takes a little bit. And so his experience will probably be that he doesn't see or use much Bitcoin unless he seeks it out. But if he or anybody is interested in seeking it out, I would definitely recommend pointing them to, I think the best place would be either Instagram or Twitter, Twitter, Bitcoin Beach. I can make a list of people to follow or communities to follow, but the Bitcoin Berlin community is there, because I know that, like, anybody that's traveling that wants to see and experience it, like, kind of experience what it's like, these communities are just insanely welcoming. When I visited Berlin, I was only there for 18 hours max, maybe. And both the dinner that I was there for and the breakfast at, like, 8 a.m., there was, like, a table full of 10 people who were, again, like I said, from all over the world, just kind of getting together and talking, and they're, like, painting and fixing toilets. Like, this is not like Citadel shit, you know? Like, this is like community building, like, pick up a shovel, paint the curbs, you know, and like, work together. And so, like, I would definitely go back to him and maybe communicate that and say, like, if you guys are curious and you're willing to drive to, you know, either El Zante or Berlin, whichever you're, you know, closest to, like, it could be a really, really neat experience.
That's awesome, dude. I'll pass on the information. I appreciate that. I appreciate your time, man. I'll give you a second here to shill Blink a little bit more. I think that's probably important. And I will say, disclaimer, like, I downloaded Blink, and then I saw right away it said make an account, and I just scoffed. How dare you make me make an account? So, but again, it's like the use case is not for me. I think that's the point that a lot of these custodial Lightning or just Lightning in general is trying to get across, is Lightning isn't for you if you don't need the payments. If you can use Bitcoin just as a savings technology, then that's what you should do. If you have other forms of payments, I really don't see a problem using them. But in cases like El Salvador and other places where they need payments technology just as much as they need a new money, it's probably important. So you might have shifted my perspective on Lightning just a hair back over to the positive side, which is probably a good thing, because I've been so angry lately, man. I need to spend less time being angry at fucking Lightning. Anyways, feel free to shill Blink a little bit. Anything else you want to share with the audience, go ahead, tell them where to follow you on Twitter and all that good shit, man.
Yeah, for sure. So personally, I'm AGBegin, BEGIN, on pretty much anything, Twitter. I think I heard you're not a Noster fan. I was going to ask, like, you don't even have a custodial wallet for getting zapped, but I think you said you weren't into it, but AGBegin for me. Galloy is open source Bitcoin banking infrastructure. You can find it on Twitter/GalloyMoney. And Blink is, we call it the everyday Bitcoin wallet. Like, it is supposed to be the one that you touch a lot, and that if you are in a place where you want to use Bitcoin as money for everyday payments, like, it's reliable, it's secure. Like, security is not at odds with custodial wallet. There is no replacement for responsibly held private keys for funds that are, you know, for savings. But, for Blink, it is fully reserved with geographically distributed multi-sig. There is 2FA with TOTP. So you're using your authenticator app to, like, more secure than the SEC, apparently, is Twitter account. So there's a lot of time spent on security. One thing we didn't touch on really at all, but I think is probably important in the context of Blink, is a feature called Stable Sats, which for all intents and purposes, it works like a stable coin. But it's fully interoperable with Lightning, and it's cheaper. So it actually uses trading derivatives to basically maintain a fiat stable balance. And so, again, for the person selling hot dogs in Uganda that learned about Bitcoin yesterday and just sold $30 worth of hot dogs and doesn't want to wake up to $20 worth of Bitcoin, they can use a feature called Stable Sats. Yeah, again, I think that it goes back to this whole theme of this was like, to me, it's like, yeah, utility. People are finding utility in Bitcoin. And you know, Blink is really the, a really, really good wallet for either A, introducing new people to Bitcoin and Lightning, or B, people who already have their self-custody set up on lock and just want something reliable that they can, like, travel around with and use for everyday payments. And you find it at blink.sv, or download it get.blink.sv, and on Twitter. One more thing. So Twitter is at blinkbtc. One thing that we're doing is we're spending a lot of time and energy on education about Bitcoin in native languages. And so we've built we call it the Blink Bus. It's a bottom-up squad. And they're doing education in Turkish, Spanish, Portuguese, German, Swahili. And so, you can find, we have a link tree, that where you can find all these accounts. And I think one of the reasons for this is, like, Blink should be, we want Blink to be the wallet that you as a Bitcoiner want to recommend to barber or taxi driver or grandmother a non-Bitcoiner to say, hey, here's a good place to start. You can learn about Bitcoin. You can dabble with it and then, you know, move on to your self-custody setup once you've gotten your feet under you and you're interested to dig deeper. So, and lastly, at RI Bitcoiners, our Rhode Island Bitcoin meetup. We're, like I said, slow and growing, but super, super stoked to meet in real life with Bitcoiners once a month.
Right on, man. Good shit. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show. This was a good chat. I appreciate you. Listeners, I appreciate you listening. Let me know, at me on Twitter, at Sly Goomba, if you agree with my insanity of lightning hatred, or if Andrew here did a good job of trying to get you to understand custodial lightning. I think you did. All feedback welcomed. I like talking to Bitcoiners. If you're listening to this and you have something cool to say about Bitcoin, feel free to reach out. If you're listening and you enjoyed it, share it with a friend. That's always good, especially new people. Always fun to hear from new Bitcoiners what they think about crazy things like this. And if you're not listening on Fountain, you should be. Listen on Fountain. You can earn sats. You can stream sats. You can send boosts. It's all lots and lots of fun. And hey, we're fucking like less than 13,000 blocks till the halving. Let's fucking go. It's gonna be good. Nice. Dude, are you going to the halving party? Should say this off air, but are you gonna be?
No.
Yeah, me neither. Fuck,
I'm gonna have a halving party right in my house.
Hell yeah, right on. Me too, man. We'll have a big spaces with everybody. Maybe that's what it'll be going on. It'll be a good time.
Yes.
Right on. Okay, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. I'm gonna try and put out episodes more often now, so stay tuned. Peace and love, and buy as much Bitcoin as you can before the end of the world. Bye-bye.